Thank you for listening to this message from Northwest Hills Community Church in Corvallis, Oregon. You can learn more about our church at nwhills.com. This week, we're celebrating everyone who serves at Northwest Hills. Not only is serving important from a logistical help the church function standpoint, but it's also an important component of relationships and community. The story of Hosea serving Gomer demonstrates how God serves us because of his love for us. And our serving is a way for us to live like Jesus to show people how loved they are. After the message, you're invited to answer some application questions, which you can find on our website right under the worship service video. Now, here's today's teaching.
We're going to be taking a bit of a break from John today. We'll be back in John next week. We've been in a study in the life of Jesus through the book of John, but we're going to take a break today. So it's going to be a fair bit different. I'm going to give, I don't know, 15, 20 minute little message, and then we're going to hear some stories from some people who have been serving this past year and past season. So, man, it's good to be here together. I read a study that was created first back in 2018. It was a study about loneliness, and we've talked about loneliness before here and there in different points and places, but this was a study that was done that was measuring kind of our culture as a whole and where we are as far as the people who are pretty lonely. The measurement for loneliness talked about people who don't feel understood. They don't feel that there are people who know them well, who don't feel like they have a lot of personal connections, and the numbers that I read were pretty staggering. The index that was used, apparently this is a pretty common index, is the UCLA Loneliness Scale, and it's kind of a common thing, apparently. And here are some of the numbers that I read about this study done in 2018 about loneliness and social isolation. About 46% of Americans report sometimes or always feeling either alone or left out. Nearly one-fourth of Americans rarely or never feel as though there are people who really understand them. 43% of Americans sometimes or always feel that their relationships are not meaningful. 20% of people report that they rarely or never feel close to people or feel like there are people that they can talk to. Around 53% of Americans do not have someone on a daily basis that they can regularly talk to about anything significant. Gen Z, the youngest generation, is actually the loneliest of all the generations, which is a little bit surprising. And the least lonely is the greatest generation. I think those are age 74 plus. And so, but they're not that far apart from one another, honestly. It's for the greatest generation, it's about 38% say that they are lonely. And for Gen Z, it's about 48%. So this kind of idea that, you know, older people are kind of isolated and alone, it really isn't as true as we would think, because younger people are actually far more isolated, which is a bit strange. And this is back in 2018, right? This study was done again in 2019 and 2020. I read the numbers from 2020, and surprise, surprise, they've gone up significantly. In 2020, and keep in mind that this was done, I think, in January and published in February, the numbers of people who report as lonely went up to 61% of Americans. 61%. And I cannot imagine what that number is going to look like when you talk about coming through a pandemic and kind of coming out of that. The study has not been done, or at least I couldn't find it this last year. But the numbers are absolutely shocking, 61%. The study reported that one-fourth of Americans say that their mental health is fair or poor, and less than ever, people are reporting good mental health. The CDC, which is a bit of a curse word these days, says that one in five Americans will experience mental illness in a given year, fueling what they call the mental health crisis, and at the center of it is what they're calling the loneliness epidemic. All right, so the facts are in front of us. We're people who are lonely. We're people who don't feel known. We're people who feel isolated. We're people who don't ultimately feel loved. Now, you wonder, why are we talking about this on a day that we're supposed to be celebrating serving? I'll tell you why. Last week, I was meeting with my mentor, a guy who's over 80, and I asked him, I said, what's the first thing that you think of when you think about serving? And the first word he says to me is, I think of the word community. I think of the word relationship. Because if you serve, it's always in the context of relationship. There's always a person somehow oriented on the other side of serving. Serving always is the foundation for relationship. It's always the foundation of love. To serve is to love someone. To give your time, to give your effort, to give something costly shows that you care for someone. We give and receive love by serving each other. right? This happens all over in all of our different interactions with one another. You think about just going over to someone's house for dinner. That costs something, right? It costs the effort of preparing a meal. It costs the effort of clearing out the schedule on the calendar and actually getting to the place. It costs something for both the host and the people coming, right? It costs something. I remember a few years ago, maybe longer than a few, but when we first moved here, we were part of the Young Marriage Group, and it felt like every other weekend, someone was moving. And so we were all helping each other move, and that costs you something, but it builds relationship when you're there, right? How many of you at different points in your life have helped out a friend, helped out someone with something, and it builds something? You have something because of that time that you spent together, because it costs something. You served someone in a certain way. And the more costly, the more love, right? And this isn't necessarily a dollar amount thing. Like, someone could give you something that's very expensive, but it may not cost them very much, right? If you knew someone who was a billionaire and you didn't know them well, but you kind of knew them, and, you know, maybe they decided one day to give me a truck. Like, I'd be pretty excited about that. But, you know, for the most part, like, that would be like you and I throwing a nickel at someone. It wouldn't cost very much to them. But there are other ways that we share cost, and that is not just through gifts, but it's through time, it's through effort, it's through spending intentional time with people saying, hey, how can I come alongside you? Right, our community group, the last couple of weeks, we've been doing something kind of fun where we've went to different people's houses and we helped them with different projects around their house, and they were doing fun things. And that's a cool way that we were serving each other. And I feel closer to some of these guys after just the last 2 weeks than perhaps maybe even a few months of sitting around talking about life. Because, man, while talking about life is really good, it's also really good to serve. And again, we show and share love. The higher the cost in serving, the greater the love, right? We see this in parenting. We see this in spouse relationships, because that's a huge sacrifice. There's tons of serving when it comes to your kids. Can I get an amen from any parent in the room, right? Come on, like, it takes huge effort, right? If you don't have kids and you've been in a relationship, maybe you're married, like, that is a lot of serving. There's a lot of sacrifice, but it's also the place where there's a lot of potential for a great amount of love. Again, we feel loved when someone gives us something costly. So our serving is the currency by which we give and receive love. Serving has to do with everything oriented with relationship and love. So to say that we are in a loneliness epidemic is to say that we're in a relationship epidemic, is to say that we're in a love epidemic, is to say that we're on a serving epidemic. So why is it that we are so hesitant to jump in, to be known, to give our time and our effort to serve people? Why is it that we struggle so much in this? And I say this knowing that, man, so many of us have done such a great job this year. Obviously, as I said earlier, 330 different individuals at different points this last year alone have served somewhere. But as a whole, we see that our country is really struggling with this. We're struggling with putting ourselves out there and caring for people and in return being known and being loved. Why is it that we are so nervous to give our time and our effort when we give, we actually receive in incredible ways? This morning, we're going to look at a man who gave everything and in response gained everything. We're going to look at a prophet. I'm going to guess this is something that no one would have guessed we're going to talk about this morning, but we're actually going to open up our Bibles to the book of Hosea. If you know the story of Hosea, you're wondering, what in the world does this have to do with serving? But I cannot think of anyone in the Bible, sans Jesus, who gave more than the prophet Hosea. We're going to look at someone this morning who gave everything, who served his wife in a way that is so hard to even just imagine. He served with his time, he served with his soul, he served with his heart. He served at the greatest cost imaginable. He's an Old Testament prophet. We have these men back in the day before Jesus came who were mouthpieces for God, right? God would communicate to these different individuals and they would communicate. They were kind of orators of God's word to people. And very often they would embody through their lives who God is and how he loves his people. You had a number of different types of prophets, however. Some were more connected than others. Some were more obscure than others. You've got some people kind of like, I think like Jeremiah, right? He had kind of an obscure life, or Amos, kind of obscure. And some people, you know, more politically connected. Isaiah, he was most likely born into privilege and wealth, connected with politicians and had some influence. But then you've got one guy who kind of stands alone in a lot of ways in what God asked him to do. You've got someone who God asked him to do something that none of us would ever want God to ask us to do. But he experiences God's love for his people in a way that many of us will never fully understand. But it was through this act of love, through this act of service, that God says to the world, this is how I love you, and it happens when you serve like I served. So we're just going to pick it up real quick. We're going to jump all the way through. We're actually going to get back to the New Testament here again, but I'm going to pick it up just in verse 2 of chapter 1. When the Lord began to speak through Hosea, the Lord said to him, go, marry a promiscuous woman and have children with her. For like an adulterous wife, this land is guilty of unfaithfulness to the Lord. I want you to marry a woman who is going to be unfaithful again and again and again and again. And it's going to hurt. It's going to be painful. It's going to be incredibly painful. But through this pain, you are going to understand my love for my people, and you're going to understand the pain of what it's like to have your lover continuously run away from you. Yet I'm going to give you the strength that it takes to perpetually serve her and love her again and again and again as a representation of my love for my people. So Hosea does it. We don't know a lot of the details of the story. It's kind of interesting. If you read it all the way through, there's kind of a very broad picture of what this is like. And so he marries this woman. He marries a woman who, from all intents and purposes, she, from the beginning, was kind of a normal person. You know, I think there's some debate. Some people think he went out and married a prostitute. Well, that's not super clear. It's more clear that he just marries a normal woman up front. So he marries this woman. You got to imagine he's kind of young. They get married. They have this relationship. And you know, they've got the party. They've got the wedding. And they're getting to know the in-laws. Maybe they have brother-in-law, sister-in-law. They move into a new neighborhood. And everything seems to be going pretty good. Right? Maybe they get the jobs. And life just is going all right. And they have the first kid. It's like, yay. And you got to wonder, somewhere in there, I've often wondered, somewhere in there, maybe Hosea was saying, Lord, is this really going to come true? Because everything seems to be okay so far. You know, we're doing the whole family thing. We got the kid thing. Things are going all right. But then things start to unravel a little bit. They start to unravel with child number two. So the first one they have is a little boy, and then they have a little girl. And we don't know all the details in here, but we know that when it came to girl number two, Hosea started wondering, I don't know if this kid is mine. Which you can imagine some of the hurt and pain, just the tremendous weight of what that would feel like to wonder if this kid is yours. And that pain and that hurt continues with the third kid. They have another boy. He's wondering again, is this child mine or not? And we don't know how long this lasted, but eventually at one point, Hosea wakes up one day and his wife is gone. Her name was Gomer. She's just gone. You got to put yourself in that spot. What would it be like? You wake up one day, you got three little kids at home and your wife is just gone. What are you going to answer your kids when they're saying, hey, Dad, where's mom? Where's mom? How are you going to answer that? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know where she is. Things have been a little bit hard, but I don't know where she is. Again, we don't know how long she was missing for. We don't know if this is days. We don't know if it's weeks. We don't know if it's months. But you got to imagine just that feeling of absolute horror, that feeling of just deep, deep pain and hurt. Right? What do you do when the in-laws come over? Hey, where's your wife? Where's my daughter? I don't know. And eventually through this story, we find out that Hosea finds her, and he finds her in the worst place imaginable. He finds her for sale at an auction. And I cannot imagine, it's just so hard to put yourself there. But he finds himself there, and you got to imagine at some point he's going up to the auctioneer saying, that's my wife. And this guy's saying, I don't care, like you can buy her, she's mine now, but she's for sale. And they go through this process where he buys his wife back. And imagine what it would be like to be the woman, to be Gomer, to be the wife. I mean, you're there, all the shame, all the guilt, all the heartache, and you hear that voice, that's my husband, and he's trying to buy me back. Here's someone who served with everything that he had. Obviously a small price as far as his wallet, but his soul, his heart just ripped out. He buys his wife back and he renews his vows. In chapter 3, we see him saying, hey, we're going to start over. We're going to start fresh. I'm going to love you. And all of this, God said would happen. And all of this God promised ahead of time. I want you to do this, and I want you to serve her perpetually, because this is how I serve you. This is how I love my people. I perpetually serve you. We see in chapter 3, verse 1, kind of our attitudes towards God. And we read these words that they turned to other gods and loved cakes and raisins. So here's God saying, here's my bride, here's my people. You're chasing all these things that aren't me, and I just want you to love me. Would you stay with me? And he's saying, you're going after these other things. He talks about the heart of the people who keep running away from him. We see this in chapter 6 of what this broken relationship would have felt like to God. We see this in chapter 6, verse 4. He says, your love is like a morning cloud, like the dew that goes early away. He says, you're here in the morning and you're gone in the morning. You love me with your mouth temporarily and then you are gone. We see this in two verses later. We see God describing his heart. He says, this is what I long for. We see this in verse 6 of chapter 6. He says, I desire steadfast love and not sacrifice, the knowledge of God rather than burnt offerings. Did you catch that? He says, I desire love and not sacrifice, which is interesting because here we have a people who were sacrificing at some level, right? So to sacrifice them would have been going through the religious motions. They would have been, you know, killing the animal, shedding the blood. They would have been going to church, maybe in a community. They're going through these motions that from the outside would have looked like, okay, it seems like your life is on track, but he's saying your heart's not here. Even though you're doing kind of the outside things, your heart's far from me. Right, and how easy it is for us at times to just go through the motions. Like, okay, I'm just going to go to church. I'm going to kind of do my thing. But is my heart where it needs to be? This attitude continues for 700 years of people who are kind of going through the motions, doing the whole, like, I'm doing the church thing, but my heart's not there. And to God, to him, it's like his wife's completely running away from him. This continues for a long time, and we get Jesus on the scene, and he picks up right in the middle of this. This is a story we don't actually read in John. We read it in Matthew. So if you want to go ahead and turn to Matthew chapter 9. Matthew 9, starting in verse 9, we read this. As Jesus passed on from there, he saw a man called Matthew sitting at the tax booth, and he said to him, "Follow me." And he rose and followed him. And as Jesus reclined at the table in the house, behold, many tax collectors and sinners came and were reclining with Jesus and his disciples. And when the Pharisees saw this, they said to his disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?" But when he heard it, he said, "Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick." And then I love what he says in 13. He says, "Go and learn what this means." And then Jesus quotes Hosea chapter 6, verse 6. He says, "I desire mercy and not sacrifice." So he's saying to these religious leaders, hey, you got the sacrifice thing down, but you don't have the love thing down. You don't have the mercy thing down because you see all these people who are far from me. If you were someone who loved them, you would serve them. You would care for them. You would care for people who are far from God by serving them. But all you care about is going through your little religious activity. Where are you? You don't understand my heart. And to God, what that's like is being married to a woman who after years of marriage just leaves one day and you have no idea where she is. It's like, you don't get it. You don't get what this relationship's about. It's about a love for my people and it's about love for other people. And this happens when we serve people and when we care for people like I served and cared for you. So we see this perpetual idea that we keep running away from God. Even those of us who are part of this church who are doing different things that are sacrificial, but he's saying, I desire mercy, I desire steadfast love, but we keep running away, and in doing so, we become slaves to sin. Right? This is the issue for every single man and woman here. At some point, we are slaves to sin, and Jesus has to do something about this. He has to do something. So when he's calling out to these religious leaders, I desire mercy and not sacrifice, he's saying, you are a slave. You can't do the very thing that you should do because you are a slave to something else. So Jesus does the unimaginable and he gives everything. Right? In the greatest act of service, he gives his life. And in giving his life, two things happen. He buys us back But he doesn't just buy us back, he actually wins us back too. He woos us back. See, in buying us back, we were all slaves. We were all that. We were all Gomer for sale, and Jesus had to pay for our rebellion. And he does that. He pays for it. But at some point, we have to make a choice to go back, right? Because Christ's death alone doesn't restore everything, because he had to woo us back. Right, just like Gomer, at some level, when you hear your husband out there and he's willing to pay for you, you got to go back at some point through the midst of all that shame and all that guilt. She had to make a choice to go back. So Jesus wins us back, and he does it through the biggest act of love, and that is how you win it back. Jesus says, I love you enough to give you everything. And he woos us back, and the only thing that he asks us to do in return is to go and live like him. So when he buys us back, he says, here's what I want you to do. For the rest of all the time that you have, I want you to live like me, and I want you to love like me. And in order to do that, you got to love people and you got to serve people. And in order to do that, you got to recognize that I desire mercy and not just sacrifice. Because sacrifice, you know, that can just be going through the motions. But I desire true mercy. And true mercy is loving people, is loving me, is seeing people for where they are, both inside and outside the church, and being willing to give your life to love them. And when you do that, when you give your life to love people like Jesus loved people, we open up the door to share, hey, this is who my Father is, a God who loved me when I was far from him and when I did not deserve anything. And so we want to be a church that's built on that. We want to be a church that is built on people who are perpetually giving everything that we have because we have been given everything that Christ has. And what I love about our church is I feel like we're a church that's filled with people who get this. It's filled with people who have known Christ's love, who Christ has set us free, and we've said, okay, I'm going to give my life now to serve other people. We have countless people. We could go all week long with story after story after story of people who've given their whole lives to say, okay, I am going to then live like you live, Jesus, and I'm going to serve people like you've served. So what I have the opportunity to do, though, is I have the opportunity to share some of these stories. And so I'm going to bring up a couple friends. If you are sharing this morning, would you come on up here? And we are going to hear stories of people who are giving and serving in incredible ways, and in so doing so, living like Jesus. So why don't you give a hand? We got some friends coming up here. So like I said, we could go all day because we have so many people who are doing so much here, but we want to just get a small sample of people who are serving in different ways here at Northwest Hills. And so I'm going to start with my friend Sam. Sam, I had the opportunity of serving with Sam in youth ministry a few years ago, so I have seen Sam just give a huge amount of his life. This is someone who's given about 8 years of his life serving kids. I mean, you want to talk about someone who has probably given more of his vacation time to our church than to his own life, loving on our kids. How many Sunday mornings? Yeah. How many Sunday mornings is he taking kids out to breakfast, opening up the Word with them? I mean, I've been with a group of young boys with the hardest of hard conversations, and here's Sam just saying, hey, here's what God has done, and here's how we are to live. So Sam, would you share just a little bit about, you know, what you've been doing, how you got connected, and what it's done in your world?
Yeah. So, like Josh has said, I've been serving with the youth for about 8 years now. Yeah, almost to the dot. I grew up here at Northwest Hills. My parents, John and Heather, have been going here since way before I was born. I got connected with youth years ago, back when Randall was youth pastor. He went on sabbatical and asked me, I was asked along with some other people to step in and kind of fill in while he was gone, and that just kind of triggered something in me, and I loved it, and I stuck with it for 8 years now. So, let's see, man. Yeah, so I did that for quite a while. Just some of the things that I've learned, there were just two things that came to mind when I was asked, like, what did I learn through all this? The first one is everybody says the best way to learn is to teach, and that's so true. Hmm. When you're taking time to teach people about who God is and how much he loves them, it really strengthens in you, like, who is God and, like, how much does he love me? And that just makes a huge impact in my life. And then the second thing that came to mind is just, like Josh was saying earlier, relationships. You know, serving is all about relationships, growing closer to people. I'm always been the type of person who always feels like I'm kind of on the outside of a group. But when I got into serving, you know, before youth group, I served in the college group for a while. I made some of the best friends in my life there, serving alongside them in the youth group, just serving with the other leaders and serving with the students. You just kind of get this, you kind of become part of their life and they become part of your life. And
you have a nickname for this as well.
Oh, I was hoping you wouldn't bring that up.
I won't bring it up.
No,
no, you gotta tell us now. Cole.
It's I knew this was gonna happen.
He's our den mother. We call him. So Sam is a man.
Yes, thank you, Josh. it's just it's been really life giving. I've got a lot of people who've just become part of my life, and I love it.
Yeah. So. And if we had an hour, we could line up 15 young people who would say Sam has changed their life. Mm-hmm. So thank you, Sam.
Yeah.
Love you. Yeah.
And he didn't mention this, but Sam's actually stepping out of this role because he is getting married. So
yeah. 13 days.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting. So I get to introduce Patty Olrenshaw. I have had the privilege of serving with her for a number of years now. We started serving in women's ministry together. And when I think of Patty in serving, she just loves people. Like, it just shines through her desire to serve. And she is never afraid to say yes. We bring her all sorts of crazy ideas. And somehow she makes it happen, but she's not afraid to show us, like, you know, maybe you want to tweak this. Like, I know you love this idea, but let's make this way. It always makes it better. And so she's just amazing. And if you have enjoyed the coffee beans, she probably doesn't want me to say this, but she has put those together by herself this entire year. So if you have enjoyed those, that's all Patty. She's amazing.
Nice.
So, yeah. So, Patty, tell us about how you got plugged in and just your passion for serving and how that's impacted your life with Jesus.
Well, about 18 years ago, I got involved by actually just saying yes. There was a request in the bulletin to make coffee, and we were new to the church, and so I simply said, sure, I can help out. Little did I know that 18 years later, I would still be here, not making coffee. I do coffee beans.
But it's a lot easier.
God has opened so many doors. One of my giftings is I love all your littles. Bring them to me. I'll watch them for hours while they cry to give you a break. So it's always a blessing just to serve in children's ministry or in summer camps. But lately, the newest opportunity that I've been blessed with is working with women and plugging them in just to different needs throughout the church. I think it's true when you're using your gifts, it's a blessing. So I love working with all the Northwest Hills women, working with Carissa. It's truly been a blessing to me, and it's a great way to deepen relationships and just live like Jesus.
I love it.
So good.
Yeah, so we also have someone who's been with us, Church Online. So, again, welcome to our Church Online family. So I got a video of Russ Winchester. Maybe a bunch of you know who Russ and Patty are. So check out this video from Russ.
Hi, my name is Russ Winchester, and my wife Patty and I have been going here for about 20 years. And when we first came, we met up with some people here, the Wigingtons, and we started classes. We started creating Sunday school classes, which became interaction groups, which, you know, it's been a great experience. And some of the things that did for us as a couple, me as an individual, is it really strengthened my faith. It was I began teaching, and it really encouraged me to dig into the Word and for practical application, because we were dealing with families. And then got involved with Men's 127 ministry with great guys like Doug Stewart, Keith Lampe, and this was just, to me, the perfect mix of what I think God's called me to do. And it is helping some of those who can't help themselves. And it makes me emotional because it's just a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing to help people and to really live out. You're living out your faith, and you're you're showing people, hey, you know, we not only call ourselves, you know, followers of Christ, but we're trying to demonstrate that with our hands and our feet. And so it's been a real blessing in my life. And now both Keith and myself teach in the seniors class, and they say we're more of a blessing to them, but they're more of a blessing to me. And I learn a lot from them. Again, keeps me in the Word, keeps me searching, keeps me thinking. And it's just overall, it's just been an amazing experience to be serving that way. And I wouldn't change a thing.
Yeah. Right on. Russ, I know you're watching this morning, and there are many people who feel loved because of your service. You've built tons of relationships. Even the times I've been able to go to Men's 127 and connect with some of the different people that were serving, the things that they've said about you and some of the other leaders, just incredible. And being able to watch you from a little bit of a distance with the senior fellowship, what you and Keith are doing in there, again, just building these relationships of love, living like Jesus would live. So thank you, Russ. Similar to that, we have Keith Lampe. Keith has been a member for a long time here. The list of the things that you serve in is probably longer than a long, long list. But Keith, say just a little bit kind of what you've been involved in, how you got involved, and how it's changed your life.
So I can almost ditto what Russ just said and just pass the mic, which would probably be a good thing, but that's not going to happen. So quite a few years ago, the leadership at Northwest Hills looked for relatively young men, and yes, at one time I kind of fit that category, and asked us to take a leadership class. It was a 9-month commitment, which we did. And at the end of the 9 months, there's about 20 of us that started, about 15, 16 that ended. The question was, what are you going to do now within the church? And it was a really good class, 3 months of understanding, all getting on the same page of theology, making sure that we weren't too crazy in some of the belief systems that we had, and then kind of walk through and understanding what our gifting was. And it just happened at that same time that they had a conference in town that came from Focus on the Family from Colorado Springs, where a person came and tried to figure out how to get churches to partner with each other, engage with each other in certain outreach. And a verse that was a theme of that conference was James 1:27. And it's a impactful verse. And without going into a lot of detail, James, the brother of Jesus, is asked the question, what is true religion? What does religion mean? And his response was, live a pure life. Okay, we get that. We understand that. And James could have said a lot of things, because when we think of what our faith is, what church is, what religion is, there's a lot of things that goes with it. Worship, preaching of the word, and the list will go on and on of all the things that we would fill in the blank. And James says two simple things. Take care of the orphans and take care of the widows. Simple. Simple. Nothing else goes with it. So in my mind, our primary responsibility as a church is to take care of those within our church. And at that time, the orphans and widows were in tough shape in Christ's time. And they still are in our time. But that's a statement for all of those that are in need. So as men of the church, it's our responsibility as a Christian to take care of the needs in our church and within our family. And then when the opportunity exists, it's to spread out to within the community, the greater community. And that's what we do. And so we partnered with Loving, we partnered with Options Pregnancy Care Center, we partnered with different groups, Friends of the Family, when Ken Himes was really involved in that. And we were given families to engage with in physical ways and ways, crazy stories that we could go through, but simple plumbing not fixed, electrical outlets not working, the list goes on and on and on. So there are things that we can do and be engaged in. But who's long past now, who I had adopted, it was Esther Jabb, so she was one of the senior members in our church, who was a widow that I adopted. But she would lecture me on, you can come on in and fix whatever you want in the house. You can mow the yard, you can clean the windows, you can fix the fireplace, you can do all these different things. But what we want to know is that we're cared for, that we're part of the community, and that you love us. Mm-hmm. And by just showing up and being there can do that. So right now, my plea is, there's a lot of young men here, a lot of strong bats. Yesterday, we had to move some trash from a woman's house, and there was bags of wet cement that weighed about 110 pounds. We could have used a couple of younger men to pick up those bags of cement and throw them away. And it would save my back and several others. But there's opportunities to serve. We have a structure with which to do it in. And we could serve more. We could serve more people. And it is a true privilege. And you think that it's going to be an effort. And to pray with someone that shows you true gratitude is amazing. It just blesses you greatly. So I encourage you to serve. There's a lot of different capacities. And if you want to be engaged in the Men's 127, Russ, I, or Doug Stewart would gladly talk with you. There's more opportunities than what you can imagine. You think we're an affluent church, we're an affluent town. It's all true. But the needs are also just as great. There's so many people that have so many needs that's within our sphere of influence that we can be engaged in. Yeah. And it's the best way to serve Christ. So,
thank you, Keith.
Yeah, great way to be a light, too, in Corvallis. You know, just use our hands and feet to serve Jesus. So, okay, Pablo. Pablo is amazing. Also, his hair is amazing. Guys, come on. I love Pablo. Pablo, I remember seeing him as a high schooler, and he would come by himself, and I just thought, man, that guy is committed, you know, showing up every Sunday, being involved. And this past year, Pablo came up to me and said, hey, I want to serve. And I was like, awesome. So JJ and I had some friendly competition to see who could get Pablo on our teams, as we do with many people. But Pablo was like, I want to serve every Sunday. So he has just got such a heart of joy for serving, and he is here, he is ready, and he is just such a warm presence when people show up for church, welcoming them or helping out in the back for the AV. So we really love Pablo. But Pablo, why don't you share a little bit about yourself and how you got involved?
Okay. All right. So like Chris was saying, my name is Pablo, if you guys didn't know already. And yeah, so I serve in multiple capacities. Like, you guys will see me in the front of the door saying hi all the time or good morning, or in the back with my hair pulled back wearing some headphones. Yeah, but kind of just to give more background. So I was first going to the youth group here a couple of years ago. Man, back in the day, like 4-ish years. Yeah, so I've been going to, let's say, Northwest Hills for about 4 years. And so it was all thanks to a guy named Tom Ramsey, who's here right now, former youth pastor, and man, love that guy. Just a really great mentor of mine, and he's just been with me ever since, and I just really appreciate kind of him easing me into here, and I've just been thankful and just blessed at that man. But kind of just to bring about how I got here, it's back. So since that time I first started Northwest Hills, I moved back from Utah, then here, then Utah again. Now I'm back here, and so kind of when I first came back here around Thanksgiving to visit family, I actually got in a really bad car accident. And long story short, I almost died. It was a rollover multiple times. And so in that moment, I thought, wow, is this how I'm going to go? You know, by myself, nobody around, you know, and it just, once I came okay, got out of the door and everything, I realized that I should use my time a lot better. And that I shouldn't be wasting my time. I'm 21, but I feel like I could be here today and gone tomorrow. And so with the Spirit of God, I really just felt this overwhelming need to give not just of my time, but of myself. And so since then, I just walked up to Carissa and just wanted to serve, just with a heart of gratefulness and heart of serving. And I would say, really, that's ultimately what I've been learning, is that serving is about me, but it's about other people. You know, building what counts, those relationships, you know, because I feel the times I feel most at peace are when I've been serving here at church.
Thank super you. Cool.
And that's so great. With that in mind, I just glad to be here, and
it's great.
Very appreciative of
that. Here's the truth. I look around, and I feel like I could actually do this pretty successfully. I feel like I could take a microphone and say something about almost every person in this room about how they're serving somewhere. We really do have a group of people who get this, and it's changed our lives. It's created a family here. It's created an opportunity, like Keith preached. Great job, Keith. to really say this is our responsibility. This is what God has asked us to do. And in response to Him loving us, we get to go and love people, and we love people by serving people. And when we serve people, we break the isolation that is so prominent in our community. We break the loneliness, and we create something new and fresh, and that is the family of God. And so we really just as a staff wanted to say thank you. Thank you 100 times for serving. If this is something new for you, there's so many different ways to get plugged in to serve. You can go out to that Connect desk. The easiest way, you can go online. There's this whole section there that's talking about serving. You can fill out a card and a seat back in front of you. So many different ways to give back because Christ has given for us. So from the bottom of our hearts, thank you for serving. Thank you for making this family what it is. Mm-hmm. But mostly, Jesus, thank you for giving your life, for buying us back, and for asking us to then go and give ours. So would you pray with me? Father God, we thank you for giving us your life. God, we were far from you. And in the separation from us to you, you came and you bought us back and you wooed us back. God, I thank you for the story of Hosea, the example of your perpetual serving us, even when we were far from you, and you giving up everything to buy us back. Jesus, we want to respond with our lives, and when we do so, that is the best possible life. Life is found when we give ourselves away, when we serve people the way that you serve people. God, we build that foundation for love. God, I thank you that we have the privilege of being part of a church family who so many people get this and so many people are serving in incredible ways. We just ask that you would increase our capacity where there are times and seasons where we feel like, you know what, it just feels like a little bit much to engage here, or it feels like I'm not equipped, or I'm not able, or I don't have what it takes. God, that you would put those lies away and you would say, all I need is for you to show up. God, that's very often what you just ask us to do, is to just show up. To show people through our service that we love them, that we care for them. And in doing so, God, we get to create this family on earth that is a small picture of heaven to come. Lord, we thank you for your love for us. In your name we pray. Amen.
Thanks for listening to today's teaching from Northwest Hills Community Church. We hope you find ways to apply the gospel to your life. And be sure to check out our website, nwhills.com. where you'll find ways to engage, including resources like our application questions. Thanks again for listening.